Universität Hamburg.
Hello. The fantastic takes form in different visions. Some are expressed through language, others in images. Yet the fantastic in its original definition is to make visible. The surrealist interest in all that comes from this world of the imagination made visible dates back to the beginning of the movement in the early 20th century. The surrealist understanding of the imagination, however, evolved after the Second World War, which may be characterized by a move away from the previous engagement with Sigmund Freud and psychoanalysis towards a new path concerning magic and the fantastic. I would like to present German artist and writer Unika Zern within this evolution to discuss how her fantastic stories and later drawings merged the literary fantastic with the surrealist imagination into a mythologization of madness. On the 25th of September, 1922, members of the early surrealist group gathered to discover a magic dictation based on a spiritualist initiation. Mediating the enchanted world of the mind took different forms in speech, text, and image. In the short article, The Mediums Enter, published in the same year, André Breton designated this process as psychic automatism that corresponds directly to the dream state and the unconscious. While dissociating the spiritualistic beliefs of mediums from their interests, Breton describes the automatic experience as, quote, an act of listening, an act that follows the ear to be penetrated by the murmur of our own unconscious, unquote. The earliest experiments of the surrealists with automatism are conceived from the fantastic, whilst concealing the magical aspects of that term with the purportedly scientific diagnoses of psychoanalysis. Unika Zern, who is most well known as the longtime partner of Hans Bellmer, was introduced to surrealism in the 1950s. Prior to her experimentation with automatic writing and drawing, Zern was a published writer in Germany and Switzerland. By 1949, Zern had published over 130 prose for the press and 8 tales broadcasted on national radio stations. These early texts are widely influenced by the strange worlds of the 19th century Kunstmarken, where the visuality of language is at its peak. Unika Zern's development of this language in her later works, after having encountered surrealism, transforms the traditional fairy tale into a web of enchantment. Shortly after moving to Paris in 1953, Zern was interned in psychiatric hospitals for most of her artistic career. References to her mental illness can be traced throughout her work, especially in the titles of her books and the subjects of her drawings. The amalgam of Zern's illness and imagination in her writing and drawings bring light to the development of automatism, where the early myth of the strategy is performed through its later psychic and psychoanalytic connotations. The radio tales of Unika Zern were broadcasted from 1950 to 1954 by RIAS, which was the radio station of Berlin in the American sector as part of the re-education program. Only 4 of the 8 original scripts remain in the RIAS archive. And because of the shortage of materials at the time, almost all tapes were reused and none of Zern's recordings remain. Most of her published newspaper stories and all of her radio tales, however, have been reprinted in the 8-volume collection of works by Eric Brinkman. In his introduction for the radio tales, Brinkman notes that Zern's work for the radio and her published stories act as a metaphor for her feelings about life, which in my opinion can be traced in her automatic work late into the 1960s. In her biographic notebook, Vacances à Maison Blanche, Zern writes of her struggles in the third person. Quote, it was in Berlin at the time she was dying of hunger. She began painting for the first time while working frantically on her stories that the newspaper bought for almost nothing. Unquote. It was during this period that the Swundertier, meaning the marvelous animal, aired on a Saturday afternoon on May 23, 1953. This light-hearted radio tale is in the form of a dialogue between characters with intermediate narrations reflecting on the story as it happens. The story is accompanied by song verses and thematic background music, which transform the atmospheric setting. The marvelous animal marks the start of Zern's development of automatism through the medium of the radio. The medium of radio broadcasting literalizes Cyrillus automatism as listening to the unconscious murmur, as described by Bertrand, while retaining the magical qualities of the children's tale. The story begins with a princess walking through a park who wishes for something miraculous and wonderful to happen. Upon her wish, she suddenly turns into a small horse with pointed ears that reminds one of a donkey. The princess expresses a great joy when realizing her transformation and describes herself as a beautiful animal. One of the earliest paintings of Zern, which dates back to 1950, titled Enchanted Princess, is a direct illustration for this particular tale. Now, returning to Breton's essay, the medium, who is the spiritual receiver of messages from the unconscious and beyond, becomes in Zern's work a play on the word medium as an artistic agency of telling stories, while the plurality of the word's meanings intertwine. Mediums as a means of communication also become a middle state between the real world and the fantastic worlds of fairy tales. Thus, the unconscious is not only the mediator of the human psyche, but the magical conductor of the fantastic stories, of fantastic stories and images. Unica Zern's radio tale opens a door to a fantastic imagination where the unconscious is the site of transformation with endless variations of new objects and subjects. The story is summarized as a possible mistake of a wizard who may have turned a princess into a donkey inadvertently, by chance. The emphasis on mistakes and chance is a persistent quality of Zern's work, which can be seen in her first publication of poems and drawings in 1954. A small booklet of 10 drawings and 10 anagrams named Hexentext was published by the Rudolf Springer Gallery in Berlin. In his afterword for Zern's first publication as an individual artist, Hans Bellmer writes, "The result acknowledges, in a slightly uncanny manner, that it owes much more to the help of some other than to one's own consciousness. The sense of an alien responsibility and of one's own technical limitations leads towards a heightened flair, an unrestrained and feverish readiness for discoveries, resulting in a kind of automatism. Chance seems to play a major role in the result. Oracularly, sometimes spectacularly, a pleasantly disrespectful spirit, who is serious only about singing the praises of error and of chance, as if error was a way and chance a proof of eternity." Unquote. The process of anagrammatic poetry can be compared to the gnome plots of the 19th century Kunstmarken, where limits, errors, and chance govern the results. Frederick Manel and Dorten Wild's Fichter's Vogel, for example, provide a metaphorical space where the three sisters are confined into a particular loop by a Hexenmeister, which is a sorcerer. Zern's collection of anagrams implies a similar relation to the magic and witchery of the story. Even though Hexentext is translated into English as the witch's text, the verb hexen actually means to actively work magic. The role of the sorcerer, therefore, takes a different form in Zern's poems, where the text itself is what actively works the magic. The supernatural elements of the fairy tale are incorporated into all of Zern's writing, as pointed out by Meredith Puff Davies in her discussion of The House of Illnesses. Written in 1958, The House of Illnesses is a short text by Zern in the form of a diary, narrating with accompanying illustrations, a mysterious house where fantastic events take place. The house clearly carries the topography of a female body, which Davies suggests is a manner of representing the body identified by Freud in The Interpretation of Dreams as a typical dream logic. While Davies very successfully discusses Zern's literary references to the German Kunstmarken in detail, particularly to Bluebeard, here I would like to focus on its more magical aspects. Zern's semi-fictive narrative is self-aware of its psychoanalytic conditions, and she conspicuously expresses the state of illness. She conspicuously expresses the state of illness as a magical, visionary, and pleasurable experience. Cradling between the fantastic realm of her illness and the realities of the institution, as well as the outside world, the text mentally and metaphorically plays on the immersion of myth and madness. The House of Illnesses uses the model of the Kunstmarken in a systematic artistic process where all the fantastic elements of the plot slowly breaks down, spirals, and deconstructs itself. Zern's use of deformation and transformation of objects may also be considered in light of the writings of Georges Bataille. Though automatism is often defined in Breton's terms, the alternative views of Bataille at times lie closer to the practice of Zern, who was a fairly isolated figure, in Surrealism, even after meeting Breton in 1954. Bataille summarizes his opposing view to Bretonian automatism in his 1946 article on the subject of slumbers, and I quote, "What Breton taught was less to become aware of the value of automatism than to write under the dictation of the unconscious," unquote. Bataille points to the distinction between the value of automatism and Breton's signification of the unconscious that overshadowed this value, thus leading us to confuse the thing itself with the expression it's given by the painting of poetry. In Zern's longer, better-known narrative, The Man of Jasmine, she writes of the songs that the protagonist sings. Quote, "The text rhymes effortlessly to form simple and childlike verses, which she makes up on the spur of the moment and at once forgets." As Zern's songs effortlessly compose in a temporary moment of creativity, her drawings alike are as fleeting as the lines that transpose into morphing creatures. Bataille speaks of his own experiments with drawing, which he states is always a matter of the transformation of objects. This process is a violent one, as Bataille at one point suggests, that it's a decomposition, this is a quote, sorry, decomposition and destruction was almost as painful as the sight of a decomposition and destruction of a cadaver. Bataille also makes the point to clarify that his opinions don't allow for a sufficient role for psychological factors, thus dissociating such elements. The visuality of Zern's anagrams and narratives clearly recalls such a corporeal association, especially prominent in Bellmer's afterword for the Hexentex anagrams, where he compares the decomposition of a sentence to the decomposition of the body, and in The House of Illnesses, where the topography of the female body is violently fractured. The element of the fantastic, as practiced by Zern, can be observed under this light. The representation of an object or event, whether it's an imaginary account made visible or a biographical instance depicted, is intellectually represented while undergoing the process of transformation. In Zern's visual work, we find the mechanism of deformation as a prominent element of our automatic production. The patient file from our first internment in 1960 notes, quote, "She began to paint in a surrealistic way. She often preferred paper printed with musical notes to effectively obtain an underlayer of tone," unquote. One of Zern's many graphic notebooks, titled Album 3, was begun in 1962 during her internment at St. Anne in Paris. The notebook, which was given to Zern to draw on by Bellmer, comprised the reproduction of German composer Robert Schumann's musical scales. Robert Schumann was confined to a mental institution in the last 2 years of his life, and Bellmer, who collaborated in the artistic personification of Zern based on a mentally unstable creativity, might have chosen this particular German composer for this reason. The semi-leather-bound book represents a transformation of the object and medium, which can be seen in the juxtaposition of collages and drawings made by hand. In Album 3, we find a series of animals and other enchanted creatures transforming over and within the musical scores, which now exchange the earlier auditory element of her radio tales and her later narrative with a visual presentation that awakens an imagined auditory counterpart. The juxtaposition of collages and handmade ink drawings, similar to her anagrammatic poems, combine the elements of limit and chance to reuse and repeat figures in a manner of transformation. The impressions of the found object conduct the pen in a magic dictation, while the blobs of red ink stain the pages like blood. These bleeding images present a hidden story framed by the marks of the artistic efforts of automatism. In these pages, again, the reality of the cold walls of the institution, like the flat sheets of the cutout animals, merge with the fluidity of the fantastic imagination. In one of his first contributions to Bataille's journal Documents in 1930, Robert Desnos, who also engaged in the literary fantastic, clearly identifies collage as a technique which pushes the spectacle of reality into what Bataille would call a willed alteration that deforms and therefore continuously recreates its subject. Desnos discusses Max Ernst's The Hundred Headless Woman collage series as a representation of Ernst's research, becoming for him the grand depiction of his oeuvre. He writes, quote, "There can be no hallucinations for the poet, there is only the real, and the inventor of collages invites us to the spectacle of a reality that has been pushed further than we normally acknowledge." Unquote. In the collages, the fantastic landscapes of events full of horror are expressed with the lightest of hearts. Zorn's use of collage performs not only the heightened surrealist imagination of Ernst, but opens the fantastic to all the senses in a frenzy. With her ability to cradle between an insane creativity and a sane producer, Zorn was able to transform the murmur of the unconscious into a dialogue with the fantastic. Thus, aware of the value of automatism, she used it in her works until the end of her career. Zorn took Breton's definition of automatism as an act of listening to the unconscious further by transposing between the visual and auditory imagination. In the works of Unica Zorn, as we've observed, automatism becomes the invisible narrator and simultaneously the invisible medium, creating a potential for an infinite variability of transitional phenomena. The continuous recurrence of mental illness reflects the fear and simultaneous fascination of the surrealist with madness. By allowing her imagination and work to freely become enchanted, proves Zorn's penetration of the early surrealist boundaries. Developing on the surrealist tool of automatism, Zorn's work goes through and beyond the myth of madness while rendering the fantastic visible in speech, text, and image. Thank you.